Welcome to the Lancet Global Health Podcasts. My name is Nina Putness, and today I'm discussing iron deficiency anemia in pregnancy, an important, common, but surprisingly stubborn issue to manage globally. This is the topic of both a research paper and a comment in this month's The Lancet Global Health issue, published today, the 16th of October, 2019. So iron deficiency anemia is a low level of oxygen-carrying hemoglobin in the blood due to a lack of iron. This is often because of nutritional deficiencies, blood loss, so for example bleeding in pregnancy, and is worsened by infections such as malaria and often by pregnancy in itself. Anemia in pregnancy is common, estimated by the WHO in 2011 as almost 40% of women globally, and the majority of this anemia is due to iron deficiency. It has serious consequences, with significantly higher risk of maternal or neonatal death or serious complications to both mother and baby. Iron deficiency anemia in pregnancy also has a solution that is broadly accessible, cheap, and we know can work. So this is daily iron tablets, as advised by the WHO. However, whilst these tablets can work if taken, in practice, this is far more complicated. Daily oral iron tablets are not absorbed well by the gut and often have unpleasant side effects, meaning adherence is low, with potentially serious outcomes. These issues are sadly common, especially in lower and middle income countries. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Amit Bar and Professor Andrew Prentice, two co-authors of the research paper on this topic in this month's issue, which is a randomised controlled trial testing a screen and treat approach to daily iron tablets against WHO's recommended standard care, which is daily iron tablets for all iron deficient pregnant women. And this was in the Gambia in West Africa. Dr. Amit Bar is Deputy Director of the Gambian National Nutrition Agency, with responsibility for micronutrient programs aimed especially at improving the lives of mothers and babies nationally. He was seconded from the Nutrition Agency to MRC to study for a PhD and the study that we are discussing today. Professor Andrew Prentice is a Professor of International Nutrition at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He is based in the Gambia, where he leads the nutrition theme. He is a frequent advisor on nutrition policy to international bodies such as the WHO and has a special interest in the battle for iron between the human host and iron-loving pathogens. So both of you, thank you so much for joining us today to discuss this important topic. So as I've briefly explained, this is a really important topic and very relevant to maternal and neonatal health. Could you perhaps explain the background to this study and, given context is so important, a little bit about where you are in the Gambia?
As you indicated, the Gambia is a developing country. And yes, anemia and iron deficiency is a public health problem here. Anemia in excess of 60%, and that every three women, one has iron deficiency. So iron deficiency anemia is particularly a problem in the Gambia, especially in the rural areas as opposed to the urban area. So this is the background to why we're interested, as you have already indicated in your introduction, to try to work towards solving the problem of iron deficiency anemia, and therefore this study.
In order to try and solve this resistant issue in the Gambia, your trial uses lower hepcidin levels. So hepcidin is a protein important in iron absorption, which is lower in iron deficiency and then facilitates gut iron absorption. You use these lower levels in the blood to target daily iron prescription for iron deficient pregnant women. Could you explain a little bit more about how this could work and, importantly, how this could have been relevant in practice?
Hepcidin is a wonderful new molecule that was discovered just a dozen years ago or so and has really helped to give us some insights into what is happening with iron deficiency in a low-income setting. I need to back up a little bit and just explain that there's this ongoing battle between we, the human hosts, and our pathogens for iron, and it's very particular to the nutrient iron. And what this means is that whilst we require iron for the reasons that you've explained, the pathogens also require it, and hence giving iron can be dangerous. It has particularly been shown to be dangerous in young children, but there's also a lot of indications that it could be dangerous for mothers, not only because it promotes infections, but also because it can promote oxidative stress. Whilst giving iron is relatively easy exercise, it does cause side effects, and we wanted to try and develop a system that would allow us to achieve the same efficacy as the WHO standard protocol of just giving iron to everybody every day. We wanted to see if we could achieve the same efficacy at a much lower dose of iron. And so we need to be able to measure which are the women who are particularly at need of iron. Now, in the old days, you might have done that with hemoglobin. But hemoglobin is actually a very, very poor measure of iron status. And the much better method is to use Hepcidin. And it's really cool possibilities for the following reason, which is that not only does it measure iron status, but it also measures whether the body is at threat of infection. So if the body is inflamed at all, Hepcidin levels go up and they block iron absorption. And they hide all that iron away in macrophages to keep it away from the infectious organisms. So we thought Hepcidin would be the ideal marker by which we could test the women who most needed iron and when they needed it.
So in this trial, you used Hepcidin to identify which women to treat with daily iron tablets. However, your results indicated non-inferiority. So the Hepcidin screen and treat arms were not inferior, or in other words, they were as effective as the WHO advised standard of care in terms of your primary outcome of hemoglobin levels at day 84. However, you did not find advantages of the Hepcidin screen and treat in terms of adherence, side effects, or safety. This is perhaps a little confusing. Could you instead have tested your approach in a superiority trial?
We could indeed have done that. And the statistics around non-inferiority trials are quite confusing. I must confess it took me a while to get my head around these, and still a lot of people are confused. So what we generally do is we use a non-inferiority test if we already have a recognized therapy. So we do. That's the WHO standard of care. And what the advantage that we were looking for was something that would achieve the same efficacy but at lower side effects. And hence we use this non-inferiority test. In doing that, what you do is you set a clinical margin. You say, in our case, we put 0.5 gram of hemoglobin worse than the WHO standard of care. Now, in point of fact, our results were right on the borderline of being inferior, but according to that cutoff, they were non-inferior. So we didn't gain an advantage. Now, you're asking whether we could indeed have turned that on its head and asked, can we get a superior with this, and could we have a superiority in terms of side effects and compliance and so forth? And indeed, you're right, we could have done that, but we chose to do it this other way around.
Those specifics aside, this is a high-quality trial carried out in a very important context. With context, as we said, especially in lower middle-income countries like the Gambia, being really key in the management of iron deficiency anemia in pregnant women. We just don't see enough of these trials. How did you find the process of carrying this out?
Having high-quality trials in developing countries is very difficult, as funds are difficult to get. But we were lucky to have funds from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation supporting global iron in global health. And these funds we were able to use to get me a PhD and also to set up this trial. So we were lucky for the funding. But also with the presence of MRC Gambia here, the setup is conducive for clinical trials, and they supported us since Andrew is the nutrition team leader at MRC Gambia. The setup was definitely fine for us to conduct this high-quality clinical trial.
There has been a lot of investment, particularly by the EDCTP, the European Clinical Trials Development Project, to try to enhance the capacity of institutes in sub-Saharan Africa, in particular, for doing really high-quality trials. So we are now mandated to do all our trials, even if they're a nutritional product rather than a drug, at GCP standards. Now, you'll know that this carries a very considerable burden in terms of the complexity with which the trial must be done and everything must be audited and all the staff must be trained, etc. And there are not all that many places across Africa that are yet really tooled up to do GCP trials. We're amongst one of those. But the great news is that Africa really is coming on extremely fast in terms of the number of units that can do these very high quality trials.
I agree, that's fantastic news indeed, and hopefully we'll see many more coming in the near future. For this trial, I mentioned before that it did indicate non-inferiority, i.e. the hepcidin screening and treating didn't improve haemoglobin levels at day 84, which was the primary outcome. Bearing this in mind, what are the next steps now for management of this really important issue in pregnant women?
As you have indicated in your introduction, I was seconded to the MRC Gambia to pursue this PhD. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm now back to the National Nutrition Agency and responsible for the control of micronutrient deficiencies. So we're going back to see the interventions that have been proven to work. And we are looking after this study to suggest that we may still need to work for a better formulation of the iron tablet that would be acceptable by the pregnant women with lesser side effects, so that when they visit the clinics and these iron tablets are given to them, they just don't keep them under the pillow or under the bed and not take them. We also know that iron deficiency, in order to combat it, you will need a multi-dimensional, multi-factorial approach to it. So we're really now looking at food fortification, and this was not part of we were not strong in this before. Now we are upping it with the support of partners like FAO. So food fortification is becoming a very big thing in the Gambia here. And then the issue of food diversification in terms of consuming iron-rich foods, it's one of the things we're doing. Infection control is very important. So distribution of bed nets, etc. And in the Gambia, we have even begun to see the reduction of infections such as malaria. And so these are some of the interventions we think we are getting into in order to combat iron deficiency.
There are important parallels here with work we're doing in children. So the whole problem is that we're sort of giving out iron in large amounts in non-physiological, non-natural processes as chemical iron. And we know that we're doing damage in doing that on the one hand, and we're impeding compliance. The women hate taking the tablets. And part of the reason for that is that the iron then causes a dysbiosis. It feeds the wrong organisms in the microbiome, which gives gastric upsets. So this is part and parcel of a whole program of work we're doing, trying to find out much more physiologic means for combating iron deficiency anemia, working with the system, the physiological system, rather than working against that system.
This is all fascinating, and I wish we could discuss longer, but I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today. Dr. Barr, Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today. And I, for one, really look forward to hearing some future developments from the Gambia.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nina.